Good afternoon. Welcome to this session just after the lunch break. I hope you've drunk enough coffee. I'm István Novák, a Visual C Sharp MVP and a VSX Insider from Hungary. Before we go on, I need a volunteer. A volunteer who has certifications, either real or virtual, handling this spraying device. I really need someone. Undertake it, Paul, please. Okay. So I bought it at the internet, and it serves two purposes. First, it is said an anti-Murphy spray that will help my demo succeed. And the other reason is that it is promised that when you spray, Visual Studio Beta 2 starts up faster. Okay. So I'd like to ask you, Paul, when the audience is knocking on the table like this, then spray and help Visual Studio Beta 2 to start quicker.
Okay.
Please? If I am too slow, don't knock on the table, because in this time I get angry and my demos will totally fail. Okay? So, in the title of this session, you could see an expression, focus on performance. Saying that, I have actually three important things I want to say that are my main objectives with this session. The first is that I would like to tell you a few new technologies and techniques that help you becoming a more efficient Visual Studio extensibility developer. The second thing is that I would like to show you a few techniques that make your Visual Studio extensibility perform better. And the third thing is that I would like to show you a few tricks, technologies, and techniques that are really great with Visual Studio 2010 and makes extensibility development not a challenge, but rather a fun. Okay, let's start. I promise I will show you only a few slides, and I will focus rather on demos to show everything, how it works in VS 2010 from the performance point of view. Well, let's first see what I really want to tell you about developer performance and how I imagine that you are getting developers who perform better. The first thing is that Visual Studio 2010, as you probably have heard a lot, is based on WPF technology. It means that Visual Studio 2010 fully supports Windows Forms, but I'd like to tell you that it is worth to turn to WPF technology, learn it, and use it during your during developing your Visual Studio extensions. I will show you a demo, and I try to demonstrate why is it okay. If you have ever created macros or Visual Studio add-ins, it's time to learn how Visual Studio SDK works. It's time to download it, because downloading and using it, you can have two more extensibility options. The first, that you can create Visual Studio packages with the managed package frameworks. Packages use the full power of Visual Studio, and you can create extensions that run as they were the part of Visual Studio out of the box. The second thing is that the Visual Studio SDK provides a new way of extending the Visual Studio editor. Actually, in the past, it was a painful and very hard process, but with the new extensibility model, it's really a fun. I'm very pity that right now at this other room there is a session about Visual Studio editor extensibility. It's not a pity that in the other room this session is, but it's a pity that it's just in parallel with my session. I would like to encourage you to download the post-conference video and watch it. It's really nice and really cool. Okay. Visual Studio, as you may know, have COM origins and COM roots. Deploying your extensions and managing the whole deployment process and creating installation kits has many subtle, many small and annoying details. It has been totally changed. With the new extensibility deployment model, it's quite easy. I won't tell you too much about this topic, but please visit the next session slot, the VSX 102 session, and you will be able to pick up much more information on this topic. Okay. One of the keys to become an extensive, an efficient developer is to avoid the common pitfalls. There are so many common pitfalls that we can tread in that makes our development efforts really difficult and really annoying. I'd like to enumerate a few of them, and I like to make some demos and show you how can avoid those pitfalls, or if you are in these traps, how can you get out from there. .NET Framework 4.0 gets a new technology called Managed Extensibility Framework, or sometimes you can hear it as Microsoft Extensibility Framework. Actually, the mission of this technology is to help you turning or shifting your statically compiled applications into dynamically composed one. If we had enough time at the end of this session, I will show you a Visual Studio package that leverages and the great features of MEF. There is one other thing that is worth to mention, and this is the new, this is the set of new features in C# 4.0. Those who use the Visual Studio automation model heavily know that sometimes it's very painful to use it from C#. With the new C# 4.0, it will have features that ultimately allow you to use the automation object model as easily from C# than from dynamic languages, from Visual Basic, or from scripting. These features include the new dynamic type, named and optional parameters. I would like to encourage you to check what's new in C# 4.0. My first message is related to WPF. I really would like to encourage you to turn all of your extensions or all the extensions you can afford into WPF. What I really like in Visual Studio 2010 is the shift how it moves more and more unmanaged code. WPF itself is managed. Windows Form is unmanaged. Not only WPF is managed, but also you can be a witness that many things that are changing in Visual Studio 2010 goes to the managed direction. The new editor not just leverages into the WPF technology, but also the code is written in managed code. WPF is a directives-based surface. It's a special rendering engine. It means that complex user interfaces can use the features a lot and can benefit from the WPF feature a lot. It means that large images can be scaled, can be blended, and in the hardware. And it also uses double buffering that allows your animations be fluid and more rich. WPF not just hardware accelerated, but it also uses a so-called retained mode. Retained mode is a term to describe the graphic systems when you don't have to be involved into painting of your windows. Contrast this to the standard Windows handle-based painting, where you have to handle messages such like WM underscore paint, WM underscore Iris Bregrand, to get your pixel light up to the screen. When this kind of window handling applications slow down or just simply don't respond, actually, at the end of the day, it leads that you will have some, let's say, holes on your display. Retained mode uses another approach. Under the window handles, there are visual object trees. Retained mode always can render and compose this visual tree for you. When you want to change something, actually you change an object in this visual tree, and the retained mode graphics system automatically will apply the changes on the screen. Should your application fail to respond to request, it means that actually it cannot modify the visual tree, but the visual tree is rendered in the same way as you move your windows on the screen. The visual tree can contain very simple objects, shapes like lines, circles, rectangles. It may contain controls like buttons, checkboxes, or even data grids. More complex structures like 3D models, video, animations, and so on. WPF has something called data binding. Data binding is actually referring a piece of data from an object called target, where the data lies in another object, called the source. When the source changes, the target also updates. A data binding is described something called the data, something called the binding expression. It can be very, very easy, very, very simple one. Like, let's say it is declared that the visibility of a button is tied to a value of a Boolean property. Or it can be more complex one that is used to bind your user interface and your application logic. For example, the result of a query set is bound to the data grid on the screen. As the query changes, the data grid will be updated at the screen. WPF is very strong in abstracting the behavior of a control and abstracting and handling a separate abstraction, the visuals of a control. Styling and templating are mechanisms that allow the developers that they can separate the behavior of the controls from their visual properties and let the designers totally change the visual things without modifying actually the behavior. Okay? It's time to make a demo. In this demo, I try to show you what's different between the approach using window forms to Windows and WPF-based form windows. I will create two packages, which all list the list of, which all list the running processes, just like the task manager window. The two packages will have exactly the same code, except the UI. Okay. I will use three instances of Visual Studio. Here are the two controls. At the bottom of the screen, you can see the Windows Forms Tool window, and at the top, you can see the WPF window. Now I refresh the graphics here at the bottom. This is the Windows Forms window. Just have a look. When I resize the columns, it's flickering. Let's have a look at the WPF window. It's flicker-free on my screen, and I hope it is the same on your screen as well. Okay. With the WPF window, we can do a few things out of the box. For example, sorting by columns, resizing columns, and so on. Of course, we can do it with third-party data grids or with third-party controls, but with the WPF data grid provides it out of the box. Okay, let's have a look at the code. First, I show you the code for the Windows Forms implementation. This method called refreshData is responsible to populating the data grid with the data. Here I have a method called breadProcesses that retrieves the list of processes running on my machine, and actually I iterate it with a for each cycle. I create list view items and add each list view item to the list. As you can see, it's an imperative approach to make the connection between the model layer and between the UI layer. Let's have a look at the other application that uses WPF technology. The same refresh data method is a bit shorter. Actually, it's not an imperative approach, but it's rather a declarative one. We declare that the item source of the grid that is displayed on the screen should use the result of this process as its source. And that's all. We can find some other differences between the two approaches. The first is when I go and see how actually the visual layout of the control is represented. With the Windows Forms approach, the Windows Forms designer actually creates a code that runs imperatively and initializes the layout of the control. It's not just a long code, but actually it's not so easy to read, and it's not so easy to look over how controls are nested to each other, what properties are set, and so on. Let's have a look at the WPF form. WPF, as you may know, used the so-called XAML language, which is a flavor of XML, to declare the controls and everything's in. It's very easy. For example, I can find the data grid columns here, and I can see that there is a column with the header process name that is bound to the property, to the name property of the result set. If you see this declarative code, you can understand that it's easy to extend. Just to show you how is it to work with WPF, I will add a simple column to the data grid, just uncommenting the definition here. That will add the window title column. And I also show you how easy it is to change the visual behavior of a data grid by uncommenting this code that will change the behavior of a cell. Actually, it will change its color and font style, hovered by the mouse. No. I start it. Where is the volunteer? Thanks. Yeah, you see, you have the lot. I haven't heard people knocking the table, so you are very patient. Okay. And when I refresh this list, you can see here we see the new title, the new column, window title, and as I hover the mouse, it will change the details of the WPF data grid. So actually, what I did, changing the behavior abstracted away from the application logic. Okay. I hope this demo is good enough to convince you that you really should leverage WPF technology. Let's go on. One thing that we are, efficient developer, and another thing that we have to take care that our extensions always have a good performance. There are many, many tricks how to make a Visual Studio extension more performative. Actually, I could spend all the day and I could take over all the session slots for today and even for tomorrow just talking about these topics. I collected a few things that should be important to talk when we are talking about extensibility performance. The first and most important thing is the key rule that you must consume only those resources that you really need. And you must consume these resources when you really, really need them. If it's possible, you must release all the resources that are unused and reclaim them later when you want to use again. When I'm saying resource, I mean CPU, I mean memory, I mean file system, or whatsoever is a resource from the point of view of your extension. I would like to show you a few things. When we are talking about Visual Studio package development, the whole approach starts with loading the packages. Your package should be loaded only when the functionality are required. By default, Visual Studio loads your package on an on-demand manner, which means when you first time need a command, a part of the UI, a service, an editor, a project system, or whatsoever objects your package owns from this package. This time, Visual Studio loads the package and allows you to use that resource. However, this is the default mechanism. Actually, you can change it at least three ways. The first way is that Visual Studio has a method called IVSUIShellLoadPackage that explicitly can load your package. I would tell you, totally avoid this approach and never load explicitly a process. It's not a good a package is not a good practice. The second thing is that you have an attribute you can use to decorate your package class with, and it's called provide auto load. Provide auto load has a parameter called UI context, and its effect is that when Visual Studio Shell enters into the specified UI context, it automatically loads your package. There's a third option, when you have a tool window to show, then you have an attribute called provide tool window visibility. Decorating with this attribute, your package with this attribute, attributes causes that when Visual Studio enters into the specified UI context, actually it loads your package and shows up your tool window. One important thing I mentioned is that you know when to release resources. When you create a tool window in a Visual Studio package, that tool window instance actually is never distracted. Even if you close the window, actually it just hides the window from the screen, but it does not distract the window. Generally, when a developer or someone closes the window, actually it's an implicit sign that I don't want to use that window for a short time or maybe for a longer time. You can use this event to release the unnecessary, unneeded resources. When the window is shown again, then you can reclaim those resources. For performance point of reason, it's very important to keep your UI always responsive. If you have a command, if you have a function that does a lot of processing that takes time, let's say a few seconds, somehow you must take care of that your UI stays responsive. You can use either some background settings, background threading, some background working techniques, or you can also leverage that you can watch when Visual Studio is idle and use this idle state to make your processing. My second demo is about showing all these things. First, I will show you how to use the provide two window visibility attribute. Then I create a package using idle processing. And of course, I will show you how to release and reclaim your resources. The package I will use to do the whole things is a package called C# stats package, which actually implements a simple two window. When you open a solution, this tool window will list all the C# files in this solution and create some statistics for this C# file. For example, how many methods does it contain, how many statements, how many namespaces, and so on. Okay. First, I load this package. No, I don't load. I rather show you how to use Visual Studio SDK to create the package. Actually, when you have Visual Studio SDK installed on your machine, in the new project function, under the other project types extensibility, you will find a template called Visual Studio Integration Package. Using this, you can create a package that is integrated into Visual Studio. Now I create a package called C# stats, let's say, demo. And I launch the Visual Studio integration package wizard. I declare that I would like to write my package using Visual C#. I give a few data. That are just simply, that are just simply the properties of the package. On the next page, I declare that I would create a tool window for the package. I give a name for this window. And I don't want to create an integration or a unit test project for myself. Okay, Visual Studio creates this project. Now I start running it. Did you notice this time we did not need the spray? Or maybe we need it? Yeah, when I go here for the other windows and say C# statistics, this simple window appears, and actually it functions because I can click on this button. Okay. No, I don't add all the code by hand. I just load a prefabricated project. oops, this one. And first, I show you how it works. I build it and run Visual Studio. Okay. I close the two windows from the previous demo. And I open a project. Let's open this C# builder. So actually, this is what this package does. You can see here are listed all the C# files in the solution, and here are a few statistics. For example, C# parser.generated.cs has something like 288 members and almost 3,000 statements in the C# file. Okay. I would like to show you how I created this package and what kind of problems I had when creating it. Actually, I'd like to show it to you so that I merged together the old versions and the behavior of old versions and the behavior of the final version. And I will show you just setting a few flags. Before going on, I would like to tell you a few things about the architecture of this package. Actually, I use the model view controller architecture for implementing this package, where the model is a very simple Visual Studio service represented by the E# stats interface. It has two methods, get C# files that are responsible to obtaining all the files in the current solution, and the process file method, which is responsible to parsing and getting statistics about the specified file. Actually, this is just the interface for the model. The service is implemented by the C# stats service class that uses a lot of helper methods built on my parser to get this information out of the C# files. In this pattern, the C# stats control XAML and the related files play the role of the view. The view is quite simple. You can see the code that belongs to it. It's only just setting the items and only setting a text at the bottom of the window that shows how many items are about to be processed. The controller, the most difficult role, is actually implemented in the tool window that is called C# tool window. I have a few constants and a few flags to demonstrate how the previous states of this package were. Now, I show you the original state of the package. I'm changing a few flags. And I put some artificial slowing in the process just to show you how my tool behaved and in the first version. I build and run it. When I open the project, it shows up a tool window. I will show you how this tool window has been shown up onto the screen, but now I press the refresh function. As you can see, my UI stopped responding right now. And it's here again. When I press the button again, it stopped responding. It stops because it needs time to process all the C# files. But it's, let's say, a very impolite behavior for the users because my package uses the main UI thread to make all the C# processing, and it's not a good technique. So we should apply some other approach. This other approach could be just letting the package using the idle time and process all the things during this idle time. For doing this, I have to refactor my package so that it uses two new things. The first, instead of processing the files, I should queue the files and let them process in idle time. The second thing is I should update my UI so that it could update itself when a file is processed. It's quite easy. Let's see how it's done. The second thing is solved easier. I define a collection that is an observable collection. An observable collection in WPF is a collection that can notify the UI that something changes. And using this, the UI actually can refresh its content without any other interception. The second thing is that I use a queue for storing the files that should be processed. Let's have a look how it's working. I have a refresh data process that has a branch for using idle processing or the normal way. For idle processing, what I really do, I just iterate through all the files that are in my solution, and I simply put them into the queue. When it is a non-interruptible processing, actually, I iterate through the items, I process them in place, I add them to the collection, and of course, this is a little cheating, I sleep so that I could demonstrate the effect of the whole thing. Okay. It's not so difficult to use the idle processing. What I should do is actually set up my two windows so that it will use the SOLE component manager service and register an object that is able to do the idle processing. Here, this fregister component methods actually registers my tool window as one that able using idle processing. To sign that, my tool window implements the OLE component interface. This interface contains something like 11 methods, I show you. These methods, most of them are quite simple. Here they are. You can see that they return either 1, 0, or sometimes return nothing, but their body is actually empty. And the most important member is fdoIdle. This member is used when Visual Studio is idle. It simply calls my processOnIdle method. processOnIdle method is here. No, it's another cheating. I built up an artificial slowing just be able to show you how it works. And when it's time to process something, then we check if there is any file in the queue to process. When there is, we take it out of from the queue, and actually we process it and add it to the collection. Okay, now I change the flex so that I could show how it works. I put an artificial slowing, let's say 5. 5 times slower than it should be. And I say use idle processing. Okay. Let's start debugging it. Okay. It's not the best volunteer you have. You see, during the processing, you can see the counter is decreasing. I can actually open files. I can actually build my solution that will fail. And I can move the tool window. I can even resize the columns. And it's working. It's a bit slow because I artificially slowed it down, but it works. And the UI stays responsive. So it's so easy. The second thing I would like to show you is how to reclaim, how to release and reclaim resources when a tool window is closed. For demonstrating this, I will show you one of the core structures that actually keeps information about C# files. This class is quite simple. It has a lot of properties. And actually, it has something else. It has a nice buffer just to waste my memory. It contains, this buffer actually allocates 1 megabyte. When I call the constructor of this class, it immediately allocates resources, which means actually it allocates a new byte buffer, and it reads the file, the source file, into this file buffer. It's not needed for processing the C-sharp files, but I can demonstrate the effect of this fake resource use. Okay. I modify my two windows so that it could. It will use the resources. Yes, it's false. I start debugging it without debugging it. I open the source code again, and I say, let's have some information about the memory usage. I will use the process information form I used to use in the first demo. Okay. I start processing again. And here you can see this is the experimental instance that runs our package. It starts consuming memory. Maybe slowing it 5 times slower than originally. It was a bad decision, but now we have to wait this. Yeah. You can see at the end it consumes something like more than 600 megabytes. When I try and refresh the list again, then the memory consumption goes and goes on. Okay, I won't wait while it goes over 1 gigabyte. What can we do? Actually, we can catch the events when the window is about to be shown or about to be hidden. For doing that, we have to set up the event handler in a convey in the two window code. And it is set up so that I set a property at the window frame to an object. This property is called like this, view helper. I set it to an instance that implements an interface called IVS window frame notify, windows frame notify 2, windows frame notify 3, or similar. When I go and show you this interface, oops, it has a few methods, like onClose, undockable, change, unmove. But the method I really use here is the onShow method of this interface, which takes one flag that shows if my window is about to be shown or it's about to be hidden. When my window is about to be hidden, I actually go through all the C-sharp file information, I release the resources hold, and at the end, I call the garbage collection, just immediately give back the system memory to the operating system or to the .NET environment. When my window is about to show again, then I allocate the resources again. Okay, now I turn on resource savings and show you the result. Okay, I load the project again. I start using the resources. As you see, no resource usage is something like 200 megabytes here. I wait while it goes a bit up. And then I close the window. and check it again, and it goes under 200. Then open the window again. It's almost 600 megabyte, and I close the window again, and it goes under 200. So actually, it's not a big trick, but if you have such kind of resources like this, and you have an implicit sign from the developer that he or she doesn't intend to use resources, release them and reclaim them later. I didn't show you one thing. At the beginning, if you remember, when I opened the solution, the two windows automatically appeared on the screen. It is due to the attribute I added to my package. It is here in the C# stats package. It is this provide two window visibility attribute. Actually, it has two arguments. The first, it identifies the two window, and the second, it's a GUID value that identifies the so-called UI context. When Visual Studio enters into this UI context, the two window is automatically created and displayed. This UI context called solution exists means that when there is one solution loaded into Visual Studio, then Visual Studio enters into this context. Let me show you how it works. I will change the context to another called full screen mode. When you say view full screen, Visual Studio enters into this context. To show how it works, I put a breakpoint here at the package initialization method. And this time, I start Visual Studio experimental instance in debug mode. I will send it back to the internet storage because they promised me for $10 that Visual Studio starts much faster, but okay. So, I say view and full screen. Oh, Visual Studio entered into this UI context and is about to loading our package, and the breakpoint has been reached. Another breakpoint has been reached. Oops, we have too many breakpoints to be reached. Okay, and here it is. The interesting thing is when I exit from the full screen mode, Visual Studio automatically identifies that my two window should be hidden because it is assigned to the full screen mode and it automatically hides it. Okay. So this was what I wanted to show you as my second demo. Oops. And let's go and look for some other topics. Actually, the most difficult thing with package development is to avoid the common pitfalls. There are many of them. The two most important or the two most frequent are the package load failures, which are generally because we make some exception in the initialization code of the package and it cannot be loaded. Sometimes it is so that our package is about to use some referenced assemblies, and because the referenced assemblies are not on the probing path, Visual Studio cannot load them, and so it cannot load our packages. The other frequent set of issues is the Visual Studio command table or the VSCT files. VSCT is an XML description of the UI to be merged together with Visual Studio. And actually, it has a quite fixed schema. So syntactically, it's quite difficult to create an invalid VSCT file, but semantically invalid VSCT file, well, it's another topic. We can create it. And there is another issue that hasn't existed before in Visual Studio 2008, but because Visual Studio 2010 or 2010 is using WPF, there is some issue with WPF2 window. Actually, we can compile our WPF2 window, but it doesn't work. And I'd like to show you how to avoid this kind of common pitfalls. Okay. This is my last demo for today. So let's go back to the C# stats package we have used. And first, I add some not so polite or not so nice behavior to my package. Actually, what I add here, I try to use a service that I have not initialized. I say var C# SRV requires to get service type of C# stats service. So I try to get an instance for a service called C# stats, and I will cast it to C# stats. And I want to get all the C# files. Okay. Let's run this project. And then I'm about to show the window. I've got a nice message. When you are developing packages and you see such kind of message like this, then probably you made some mistake in the package initialization. It can be either referencing an unavailable assembly, making some exception, or even can be some more complicated thing. But this is the sign what you see. If we are going to continue to show this message anytime when we are about to initialize the package, we've got the same. However, when I click no, I experience this. I don't see actually anything. Just something is not working. It's not a good situation. What can we do with this? Actually, there is a nice way to track Visual Studio packages, and it's the so-called activity log service. There is a service within Visual Studio that can be used to put trace messages into the file that Visual Studio uses. The key to this is that we have to add the /log option when starting Visual Studio experimental instance. This file is located under your roaming profile. I try to show you. Your roaming profile under the Microsoft Visual Studio 10.0exp, and its name is called activitylog.xml, and it has a related activitylog.xhl. I open this file with, let's say, Internet Explorer. And here we can see the activity monitor log. And when I scroll down, oops, here's something wrong. Here is an error. Set site failed for package. And here is my package name and package load. This set site failed is a good sign that my package initialization failed. So I can't find the error in the initialize method or some method code from that. And there is another warning. Package failed to load, error message subscribed by a skip flag. It means that actually I don't have any visual feedback next time on the Visual Studio screen that my package is failed. So it's not a good situation. Okay, let's correct now the package and see how it works. I remove these and I run it again. Here it is. Wow. View other window. It was my C# statistics package. It's there. And now let's go back and look for this file. Oh. Here it is. Package, begin package. My package started to load. This is a message that I put into the activity log. And this is the message that my package successfully loaded. Let me show you how I did it. I just put an activity log.write statement here. Actually, activity log is my helper class using the IVS activity log service, but it's quite easy to write this code. Even I can show you how easy it is, but not this time. Okay, let's examine another issue related to the WPF packages or two windows. I just want to check that when I start this package, then the two window is on the screen. Yes, here it is on the screen because I need it for this demo. Okay. And now I change the XAML file so that it would stay, it would compile, but it would be semantically invalid. I would change in the XAML file something, for example, the name of a style. Let's say I will change the name of this style here from numeric cell style. I add the letter Q here, and when I compile it, it will compile, build or succeeded, but when I run it, it will fail. This exception doesn't come from the fact that I modified the XAML file. It's another exception. I don't know where it is come from. Yeah, that's what you see. There's a two window that is assumed to be a WPF two window, but its body is empty. And it's not a Visual Studio bug. It's the problem that I have a WPF file that is actually syntactically invalid. In this case, it's quite easy to guess out what the problem is. We just have to start Visual Studio in debug mode. When there is an exception, I can go and look into the exception details. And generally, in the inner exception, here is the real message. Cannot find resource named Q numeric cell style, because there is no such a resource like that. It's important because this kind of, let's say, issue or trap was not in Visual Studio 2008 because it did not use the WPF technology. Okay. And at last, first I correct the program. I will show you, oops, oh yeah. First I must stop the experimental instance. Now we can knock again because it takes a lot of time while it goes out from the debug mode. I really wanna return back the spray.
What about Shift F5 shutting
down? Thanks a lot. It helped. Okay. I changed the VSCT file so that where is the VSCT file? Oh, here it is. So that it syntactically stays valid, but semantically not. A common mistake is from Visual Studio package developers that they don't nest the controls in the VHCT file in the right way. For example, a button can be put only into a group. Right now, the refresh button on my tool window is put to a group named Refresh Toolbar Group. Refresh Toolbar Group is put to a menu having the identifier C# Stats Toolbar. So now I try to put the button directly to the menu and not to the toolbar. When I run this program, actually, it compiles successfully because there are no syntax errors in the VSCT file, but there are semantical issues. Oops. Exception has been thrown by the target of an invocation. Let's try it again. Again, it's the same. Because I don't have too much time, I just show you the remedy. The thing you have to do is to go in the C# Stats Tool window, put breakpoint to the class constructor, to put breakpoint to the onCreate method. And what you will expect when you reach those breakpoints, you can finish all those methods because the error is somewhere out, somewhere into the code run by Visual Studio. So if you find something that you are using two windows and you can debug through the class constructor, you can debug through the onCreate method and everything is successful, that it is a good sign that you made something wrong in your VSCT file, and when the tool window is to be rendered and the toolbar is to be put for the tool window, then you have some issue with the VSCT file, and according to that, you can find it. Okay? Just let's have a few messages. Without rereading it again, these are the five messages I want to transmit to you with this session. And as I see, we have something like 3 minutes if you have some questions.
The VSCT, does it get logged into the problems like you just showed? Are there not logs anywhere?
The question was if VSCT issues are logged anywhere or not. They are not logged. VSCT is actually compiled into a binary resource file, and this binary resource file is merged into the UI of Visual Studio during setup time. And actually, these are just resources within Visual Studio, so actually, there are no code really belonging to them. However, it could be done so that Visual Studio could log this process, but right now, it does not log. Sorry, repeat the question. I did not hear you.
Any information or guidelines for tools or methods to use in troubleshooting VSCT?
You can hunt them for different blocks, but there is not a central place for these techniques actually right now. But I forget to click, and here are some URLs, and on my blog, that is the .NETES blog, you can find solutions for such kind of programs, and I plan to make a transcript of my presentation on this blog in the next few days, and I have my Learn VSX Now series where you can find some other information for troubleshooting. Okay, guys, thank you very much for your attention after the lunch session, and enjoy the remaining sessions of the conference.